This week, as Donald Trump won primaries in Florida, North Carolina, and Illinois, he talked about how huge his victories were.
Everybody's writing about it all over Europe. All over the world, they're talking about it.
In this case, Trump's grand assertion was not entirely an exaggeration. In an op-ed published this week by the state-run Global Times, the Chinese government used Trump's rise as an object lesson on the perils of democracy. Quote, Mussolini and Hitler came to power through elections, a heavy lesson for Western democracy. Even if Trump is simply a false alarm, the impact has already left a dent. The U.S. faces the prospect of institutional failure. Simon Denyer is China bureau chief for the Washington Post. Simon, welcome to On the Media.
It's good to be here.
So, I mean, it's not the first time China has taken advantage of American-style mayhem. I remember after the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, the government took the opportunity to point out American inferiority and all-around hypocrisy, right?
You're right. I think this is different because they're really crowing about the failure of democracy. And this really plays into one of the Communist Party's big arguments here, that one party communist rule stands for stability and democracy is inherently unstable. So when they see democracy, as they put it, electing somebody who incites violence or somebody who's racist, they can't help telling their people, look at that, look at democracy. You don't really want that, right?
You tried to pick apart basically what was underneath the message, that it wasn't about Trump at all.
That's right. It's about whether democracy is a good system. So first of all, one thing they said is, well, we all know that voting for people doesn't do any good. So why not vent your anger and vote for Trump? The other thing that they said, of course, is that, you know, democracy leads to fistfights, leads to people arguing with each other. I think it's one of the big pillars of Communist Party legitimacy, that without the party, China would be unstable. But it's important to realize here that this is something they've really twisted around. They've elided a big part of China's own Communist Party history.
What do you mean? It's been absolutely smooth sailing since Chairman Mao.
Right. Well, let's talk about Chairman Mao for a second. You know, I mean, the Cultural Revolution, the Great Leap Forward, famine which killed tens of millions of people, an era of absolute chaos, terrible suffering. So one party rule is pretty dangerous when you've got an extremist in charge or someone who's unbalanced. They forget that.
I think we get what the government feels about Trump. Do you have any sense of people across the political spectrum, what kind of take they have on him?
Yeah, I mean, it's very hard to tell what people really think in China because so much of it is censored and so much of it is filtered through the Communist Party's own system. But people do express their opinions on social media. There are people who are pro-US, who are pro-democracy and freedom of speech, who wouldn't particularly like Trump. You know, the funny thing is that there are a few people in the US, Chinese dissidents, and not just Chinese dissidents, Vietnamese dissidents and Cuban dissidents, and they said there was surprising support for Donald Trump among people like that. The reason was they thought, well, actually, he's strong. He'll stand up to China. He'll stand up to China on a range of things, including perhaps, you know, the way China treats its own citizens. Now, that view has completely changed. They have been disabused of that notion, if you like, in the last week when at the latest Republican debate, Donald Trump talked about the Tiananmen Square protesters as rioters and seemed to be praising China's government for showing a strong hand in putting them down.
You said, quote, they were vicious, they were horrible, but they put it down with strength. That shows you the power of strength.
I was not endorsing it. I said that is a strong, powerful government that put it down with strength, and then they kept down the riot. It was a horrible thing. It doesn't mean at all I was endorsing it.
If some of them were attracted to Trump, none of them are now. They've really changed their view.
And how about the view towards Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, for that matter?
Right. I don't think that many people know much about Bernie Sanders, but they do know Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton has always stuck up for human rights, for women's rights in China. That makes her popular with some people in China. It doesn't make her popular with the government, and it doesn't make her popular with people who follow and believe in government propaganda, which is a large proportion of the population. So there is a strain of thought which was expressed on social media as well. You know, Donald Trump might be scary, but anyone's better than Hillary Clinton.
Boy, that sounds familiar. Simon, thank you very much.
That's a pleasure.
Simon Denyer is China Bureau Chief for The Washington Post. We spoke to him via Skype.
It's not just the Chinese government weighing in on Trump's ascent. The Economist's Global Forecasting Service recently rated a Trump presidency among the top 10 global risks, right up there with the collapse of the European Union and the jihadi terrorist threat. Back in December, the British Parliament considered a measure that would have banned Trump from visiting the UK. Prime Minister David Cameron opposed it, but he also opposed Trump.
I think his remarks are divisive, stupid, and wrong. And I think if he came to visit our country, I think he'd unite us all against him.
Saudi Prince Al-Walid bin Talal tweeted to Trump, "You are a disgrace not only to the GOP, but to all America. Withdraw from the U.S. presidential race, as you will never win." And a German newspaper recently quoted Economic Minister Sigmar Gabriel saying that, quote, right-wing populists like Trump are not only a threat to peace and social cohesion, but also to economic development. And former Mexican President Vicente Fox had this to say about one of Trump's chief campaign promises.
I declare, I'm not going to pay for that wall.
On the question of that wall, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau agreed with Fox, albeit more Canadianly.
Being open and respectful towards each other is much more powerful as a way to defuse hatred and anger than layering on, you know, big walls and oppressive policies.
But Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa sees an upside to Trump. This week he suggested that while a Trump victory would be bad for the U.S., it could invigorate progressive Latin American leaders. And at least one world leader is unreservedly excited about Trump. Russian President Vladimir Putin.
He is a brilliant and talented person without a doubt, but it is not our right to identify his virtues. It is the prerogative of the U.S. voters.
Another upside. Trump sets the bar so comfortably low, it's easy for even the most bellicose politician to vault. For example, when Trump called for closing U.S. borders to all Muslims, quote, until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on, he was likened to the far-right president of the French National Front, Marine Le Pen, to which she said, seriously, have you ever heard me say something like that? And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tweeted that he rejects Trump's remarks about Muslims. So, we got that going for us.
And that's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Kimi Regler, Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, and Mythili Rao. We had more help from Dasha Lusitsina and David Conrad. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Casey Means and Casey Holford.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter's WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.